G'day everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Jetstream, where we're discussing today the preview of the upcoming Melbourne City versus Newcastle Jets match on Saturday, the 18th of March, kicking off at 7:50 p.m. And joining me today is just one person, and I think you might like to say hello. How you doing?
G'day, Navicastrians. How you going?
Bodes. Bodes, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I'm paddling my canoe again down Hamilton, Beaumont Street. So, yeah. It's
mate,
all raining.
You've been down to pick up the latest beers that you're going to rate for us.
Yeah, I'll be picking up a six pack of different beers, and I'll look forward to you hearing how they actually tasted and a review of them in about 6 months' time.
Well, mate, just make sure you got the Simpsons turned down in the background. But it's nice to be joining us. Look, I don't really. You've got a six pack, mate. I'm not really expecting you to contribute this week, given you are also paddling your canoe. But it's nice of you to join us. And Ferns, welcome, mate. This is feeling weird. How you doing, mate?
Good, mate. Good. We're through the looking glass here, peoples. It's a parallel universe where Dave's hosting and I'm a guest. So yeah, I've handed over the reins to Dave for this one.
It's like the master and the apprentice, mate.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, mate, because it is just you and I, it's pretty much free reign.
And
because it's free reign, that, I guess, must mean that it's a Liverpool-themed episode.
Absolutely.
What do you reckon?
Absolutely. I think that'll please about 70% of Newcastle because, you know, there's a fairly high proportion of Liverpool fans in Newcastle. So, g'day, Reds.
Very good. With the derby coming up this weekend, it should be a good weekend, I expect, for Reds fans. And those that are listening, you can get along to West's and stick around, actually, after the game that we're discussing today and watch it at West's. But, mate, let's kick off with the opening question. I remembered this is feeling weird again as well, but what's the greatest ever Liverpool goal that you've seen or watched?
I will just correct you on a point there. The derby's not actually until the 1st of April, mate, so it's not this weekend.
Going off a text from someone else who asked me to put out there that it's going to be on at West's. No, it is going to be on at West's.
Yeah, we're getting in early, but the game this week, I believe, is like 4 a.m. at some ridiculous o'clock time. But, the derby is on the 1st of April at 10:30 p.m. Get along to West's and enjoy the game. As far as my favourite Liverpool goal, I would say overwhelmingly, a lot of the goals that Suarez and Torres scored would rank highly amongst my favourites, especially when they're scored against Evertonians or Manx. But I'd say probably the best one I ever saw watching it was the Steven Gerrard Thunderbastard from the 2009 FA Cup final against West Ham.
2006.
That's right. I was close. 2006. Yeah, 2006 FA Cup final. That was a howitzer, and just purely for piss taking, I would have to give an honourable mention to the fourth goal in 2000. No, that's why I got it mixed up, because my other favourite goal was the one that Andre De Sena scored in that 4-1 rout of Manchester United that took place in 2009 on the 14th of March, so the anniversary just passed. But yeah, the 4-1 rout of Manchester United at Old Trafford, it was purely De Sena scoring in like the 92nd minute, taking the piss, lobbed the keeper, and it was hilarity all around. It was absolutely fantastic. One of the shittest players to ever pull on a Liverpool jersey, and he was ended up getting a piss taking goal against the Manx.
Mate, if this wasn't simply audio and this was video, you'd currently see me sitting here with my hands in my head because you've picked...
Your hands in your head?
But my head in my hands. Oh, mate.
There's your episode title. We've already done this one. I think about two seasons ago, it was a hands in my head moment. And I think that was we'll use it again. That's another episode title. Yeah. Why not?
No. this is a podcast, but not as you know it.
Yeah.
but that was the goal, the Gerrard goal in the FA Cup was the one that I was going to talk about. Other memorable ones for me: Michael Owen sliding it past David Seaman.
Yep.
Yeah, for just running past and knocking it past him in the 2001 FA Cup.
Yep.
That was one of my earliest. I actually set my alarm to get up to that, and I set a tape to record it, VHS to record it, and I slept through my alarm. And when Arsenal finally scored in that match, I actually fast-forwarded it.
Yeah.
And found out the result, but and so I couldn't. I couldn't sit through it. But mate, I don't know if you remember the one against Bodie. I love this one. It was scored against Blackburn.
Yep.
Torres basically let it drop, and he just lashed it in from out wide on the right to the box. I was at Anfield that day.
Oh, brilliant!
And that was fantastic. And Agger also scored a. It was about his fifth or sixth attempt from range to score a long Thunder Bastard. And he finally got one past Paul Robinson, and the players all ran over and celebrated basically in front of me. And, mate, that is something that is etched in my brain.
Yep.
But all those goals that you've mentioned there, absolutely fantastic. But, look, we could talk about Liverpool all day.
We could.
We probably shouldn't.
Any of the hat-tricks scored by Luis Suarez against Norwich, you know, I could go on all day.
Can you narrow it down?
No, I really can't. They're all good.
Oh, mate, you say Suarez and Norwich and you go, yeah, but which one?
Yeah, well, I think he scored about 15 of them over the course of
two seasons.
Yeah, two seasons, exactly right. I hope you're enjoying this edition of Red Jet Radio.
There's a title there.
There you go.
So let's talk about the game, mate. We'll have a look at some stats.
Sure.
So 20 matches between the two teams. The Jets are on 9 wins. City are on 8 wins. And there's been 3 draws. In Melbourne, the tide really is completely opposite. City have 5 wins to their name. There's been 2 draws. And the Jets have won twice down there as well. It really has been a... despite the Jets winning, you know, 3 of the last 5 matches against City, they've only won 1 game, I think it is, in... Oh, jeez. 1 game in their last quite a few.
Yep.
I had it here in front of me before, but I don't have it in front of me.
You've turned the page and there's
me
no going
stalling.
Back. You've turned the page and there's
no going
just
back. Once in our last 8 matches against City down there.
Yep. Well, the one we did win was memorable. But that doesn't surprise me. But I thought overall the record would be a little bit more lopsided. I thought most of our wins would have come when they were before they became City and they were still hot and they were perennially rubbish. But it sounds like it hasn't changed much. It's basically they suck up here, we suck down there.
Yeah, pretty much the complete opposite to say the Brisbane tie where we suck down here and they suck up there. lots of sucking.
Yeah. Another possible episode.
There's never been a scoreless result between these two teams. There's only 1 match of those 20 with fewer than 2 goals. On average, the goals in this match is 3. So, you know, those that like to have a bit of a dabble, gamble responsibly. I'd be putting your money on that. It's almost a banker. Interestingly, this season, Andrew Nabuh and Bruno Fornaroli are the only players to have scored in this fixture. They've both scored 3 goals each. But we haven't conceded a goal in the first half of our last 4 matches. So, it's there for the taking for the Jets with Clayton Zane. But, mate, what are your thoughts on the match just in general? How do you think we're going to look to approach the match down there in Melbourne?
Well, I think that going off our... I reckon that result we had the last away game we had where we actually won when we came back would give us a bit of confidence. But we just have to work out how to score again because our scoring has really dropped off in the last... when was the last time we scored more than 1 goal in a game?
Probably City.
Yeah.
That I can remember.
So it's been a little while. Nabuh and Hull, while they had a good patch like over Christmas and New Year, it sort of dried up once it got to probably beginning of February. It's been probably 4 or 5 games it's been since they've worked out how to score. Koko coming back into the fold. Hopefully they continue with him this week and he can double his tally. That'd be nice. Hopefully he can get a consistent run in the team. But we really need to work out. We need to get our goal scoring form back because we late November, December, January we were scoring for fun. Nabuh had pretty much tripled his. His goal tally for the season and in the space of a month and a bit, but it's sort of all seems to have fallen away a little bit as the poor results have piled up, we've dropped out of the six. We're sitting in eighth at the moment, an outside chance of making the six, but you know, we're now relying on other teams to fall over as opposed to having our destiny in our own hands. So this is going to be one of those games, and with a run of four away games in the last five games, we really need to start this run positively and be able to get some confidence to handle the rest of the away games, which we're going to need to pick up points on. And you know what happens when the Jets go into games requiring a win and getting confidence, it's probably nailed on not to happen.
Yeah, look, we've spoken about it on the pod numerous occasions that it's something that we've really struggled with. And it may surprise you, it may not, but the Jets haven't scored the first goal in an away fixture all year.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
From a possible 30 points on offer on the road this season, the Jets have only managed to claim 7 Ferns with 3 away fixtures in a row. It's really not looking good for them. I mean, you touched there that we're on the fringes of the six and it's a must-win game. Surely our strikers have to be firing obviously our strikers need to fire. What do you think is going to be the key to them looking to get the space to get a goal against City?
Well, being mobile and being positive and being being proactive in hunting down possession. We need to force the turnovers. We need to try and force City into trying the quick passes because they're not necessarily as accurate as they could be. It's going to be interesting to see whether Cahill plays or whether he's, because I think he's been benched for the last couple of games, hasn't he? And they've been bringing him on in the second half. So, and that seems to have coincided with a little bit of a resurgence in their fortunes. How have they gone the last couple of games?
They have the last couple of games. So I'm just going to find it. They've managed to get 7 points from their last five matches. So
that's not much of a turnaround.
Two wins in their last three matches.
Okay, so the last three matches they have actually turned it around a bit. So I mean, and they were missing, I think, probably 4 or 5 matches ago was when they had that massive injury crisis and people suspended and all that sort of thing. So it seems once they got those players back and they pulled them into their squad, they've actually seemed to have solidified themselves a little bit. And I think not making a decision, they just basically appointed Valkanis to the end of the season. So I think that's probably helped stabilise things a little bit rather than, we're not going to try for this coach because a new bloke might be coming in the next couple of weeks. That's now not a factor. So from our point of view, I think that we need to be positive. We need to be energetic. We can't sit back. We need to pressure them when they've got the ball and force the turnover so that we can then counterattack as quickly as we can because that's where we were the strongest.
Well, with that in mind, let's have a look at the squad that the Jets have named. Obviously, Jason Hoffman is suspended for this match following his red card in the previous game.
That seems like months ago now.
It does. It really does. It's almost like the off-season and you're just going, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to talk about?
Yep.
When's something going to happen? The players that have been promoted into the team are Harrison Sawyer, Ivan Vujica, Jack Duncan and Joel Allwright. They all come in with Piers Clarke as well being omitted from the squad. Jason Hoffman's suspension is going to be an interesting one. Two questions. What would you be looking to do with our back four, given Nick Cowburn isn't named in the team as well? Keep that in mind, given, and we'll come to his whereabouts, as I'm sure everyone is aware, later on. But how would you be looking to line up the defence for this match against what you think that the Jets are actually going to do? Mark Jones, Clayton Zane?
Well, personally, as much as I don't want it to happen, there's really no other choice apart from throwing in Allwright, which I don't think is going to happen. I think he's going to stick with keeping Mullen at right back, which, you know, drives me crazy, but there's really no other option with the people that are unavailable. So I think that what's going to happen is that we're going to have Mullen at right back. It's going to be the usual centre partnership of Bugard and Jackson. And then on the left, Voyitz will come straight back in and start on the left. Our usual two in the middle with Poljak and Poljak and Ugarkovic, and they're really going to have to be on their toes. They're really going to have to double-team Fornaroli, I think, because he's proven to be the difference every time we played him. And across the front, I hope we stick with Coco and playing in front of a front three of Houle, Naboo and Brown, although I would actually like to see Houle being given a rest. I think he's, with all this talk that's been going on of him getting an overseas, not taking a Jets contract and looking overseas, I think his head's been turned a little bit, and he's definitely dropped off in the last couple of weeks with his work rate. So I would actually be bringing on Lele in place of him.
Okay. There has been talk on NewcastleFootball.net forums this week that Johnny Katrumbis has been training out at left back. Is that a move that would surprise you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he seems to be Johnny utility at the moment. They played him in a number of positions. I would, in this a game against this sort of opponent, with the sort of players that are going to be running at him, I wouldn't be throwing him under that much pressure. I mean, he's mainly played centrally. He hasn't really played as a sort of a left or a right. I would be keeping him as a that sort of player to play either as a centre back or in a midfield. You could even argue the case that you could drop Poljak and give him a bit of a rest, although that might be a bit harsh on him, and play Ugarkovic and Katrumbis as a defensive midfield pairing. That could be interesting. If they've been trialling him in the left back position at training, that leads me to believe that that's probably what Jonesy's going to go with, because they did the same thing in the lead up to when we saw Marlon at right back, and that was a bit of a surprise, except we obviously knew from a couple of days beforehand that Marlon had been trialing at right back, and that's how he ended up being deployed. So I really hope they don't do that. I really hope that they play the left back that they've got in the squad in that position rather than just sticking a utility player there, especially against a top four team that Melbourne City is. I would like them to play Vujica, but if they've been trialling Katrumbis, they may end up doing that. But that's both of our fullbacks are both players that don't usually play in that position. They're both central players being played in wide positions, and that's always dangerous.
Yeah, look, I completely echo your sentiments there on that, and that's nothing. That's not a negative reflection on John Katrumbis' ability.
Hell no, definitely not.
I'd actually like to see him not fall under the banner of being Mr. Utility, as you say, Johnny Utility, because I mean, we then create a player that's good at a lot of positions but not great at any, and that can be a very dangerous thing for the longevity of a player's career as well.
I don't know why, but as soon as you said Johnny Utility, I just got Johnny Bravo flashbacks. I just imagine it, Katrumbis going, oh yeah. Yeah, doing the old Johnny Bravo impersonations. Yep, sorry.
I mean, you flagged up the possibility of him slotting in next to Ugarkovic in place of Poljak.
Yep.
Poljak got a rest. I mean, Poljak's now really not started a game for 3 weeks. Ben Kandarovski was in the starting lineup against the Roar.
And didn't that go well?
Yeah, would you be looking? You said that you bring Poljak back into the team. Kander won't be starting again for you?
No, I would think if anything, he would be. You'd want him to play as a bench player. I don't know what the reason was behind Poljak being rested and playing Kander from the start. I'm hoping that Jonesy had a look at himself in the mirror after the game and said, what the hell was I thinking? And promised never to do that to us again. But if there's an issue with Poljak, maybe it's, obviously we're getting through, he's played just about every game right up until then. Maybe it's a fitness and a legs issue now that we're getting to the pointy end of the season. Maybe giving him a little bit of a break might keep him a little bit fresher in the final couple of games. I don't know. Only Jonesy can answer that because he's the one watching him at training. So if there's any sort of cloud hanging over Poljak, if he's got some sort of maybe a slight niggle in some sort of injury, or there's just a drop-off in his work rate getting towards the end of the season, he's his work rate's not as high as it could be, then I would be putting Katrumbas in there with Jugarkovic, because I think that would actually be a really good partnership. Two young and fairly dynamic players, rather than one stopper and one dynamic player. It would be quite interesting to see those two. Are they too similar to play together, or are they? Would they be a better match than the Poljak-Jugarkovic partnership? Who knows? But, you know, we'll only find that out if we play them. So, yeah, I'd like to see Katrumbas and Jugarkovic, but I'd say it will probably be Poljak and Jugarkovic.
I mean, it's interesting you talk about Poljak there, and something that's been very quiet and hasn't come out into the media is that he is one of the players that are off contract at the end of this season.
Yeah.
You wonder whether that's having anything to do with it as well.
Yeah, true.
But it's actually being kept under wraps at this stage. The same can be said with Kanter. He's off contract. Maybe it was... I mean, it's a massive gamble for Jones to be taking, but perhaps he looked at the game against the Roar and said, they're coming back from a flogging. They've been in Seoul. They've been to Seoul. Well, let's look at putting Kanter in there, put a bit of pressure on McLaren, some fresher legs, as you suggest, and let's give him the opportunity to try and open the door for us to have a conversation with him about a new contract, possibly.
Yeah. It didn't help.
So you'd be looking to drop Andrew Hull. Personally, I wouldn't. I'm hoping that this two-week break has given the team an opportunity to refresh, to re-energise and look to come back with some improved vigour and some more structure. It's given, obviously, will have given Jones 2 weeks, despite the weather, which has been pretty ordinary, a chance to work on the formation, and which you'd expect by round 23 that they'd have that down pat. But personally, I wouldn't be looking to drop Hull in place of Lele. I think Hull's Hull can create a little bit more than Lele, and I think he offers us a bit more width than what Lele does. So you wouldn't be looking to bring Nordstrom back into the team for Brown?
Yeah, it's a toss of the coin that I'm inclined to agree with Dr. Emma that Nordstrom would be best served coming off the bench. I mean, yeah, I think we... We really benefited from when in that previous game against Brisbane when we did play Nordstrom behind Coco. I think the partnership didn't look too bad, but when we really noticed the difference in intensity when Brown came on to replace him, Brown was doing a lot more chasing. There was a lot more leadership up the front, because usually it's just Bugart at the back screaming at people, and maybe the voice doesn't carry up the field as much. But when you've got Brown and Bugard both taking on leadership roles on the pitch, I think we look a little bit more settled. I mean, your other option would be to put Nordstrand on instead of Hull rather than Lele. Going back to that point, I was only going off the previous couple of games from Hull where I saw all the... I saw his work rate drop off, and he's not really been his usual effervescent self on the pitch, and seeing all the talk in the media with that around his contract, I just thought that maybe that was unduly affecting him and maybe taking him out of the firing line, giving him a bit of a break from the usual Hull haters might have been a good option. But, you know, if Jonesy's not seeing that, that's probably not going to happen. But going back to your original question, I would probably start Brown rather than Nordstrand, and then look at bringing Nordstrand on in the 65th minute. Maybe bring him on in place of Hull or Naboo, depending on who's having the worst game. But, yeah, just, you know, it would help to have a player of some decent caliber on the bench that we can bring on rather than, you know, squad players that aren't really going to make that much difference to the game.
Fair enough. Melbourne City, we'll touch on their squad as well. Fernando Brandan, the guy with the best tats and the best hair in the A-League, it was announced during the week, or I think it was even maybe late last week, that he has hurt his ACL. He did his ACL in training, and he's now out for the season.
What a shame. What a shame. He's literally the most bogan Brazilian I've ever seen. If his name was actually Brendan, you would think he was Australian. Like... Fred Brendan would be his name, and he's got a mullet, and he looks like he comes from Penrith.
Breno. And Dean Bazanis is also the other significant out for this match. He's unavailable, still with one match suspension hanging over his head. However, in comes Manny Muscat, who's returning from suspension, and they've also promoted Daniel Arzani and Dennis Genereau, who both be, from, I'm guessing, their youth ranks. Yeah, and
players nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a... it's they've got a, probably a very good first 11,
yep.
Melbourne City. They've got a new look, Luke Bratton, who during the week cut his horrid haircut in support of Shave of the Cure. So actually, you know, good on you, Luke, for doing that.
And immediately immediately rendering David Squires' cartoon this week redundant.
Yes, I saw. I thought that. I wondered whether he wrote that before or after the fact.
Yeah, no, he definitely wrote that before.
Well, it was very fitting, wasn't it,
yeah,
at the end of the day? But really coming off the depth for Melbourne City, they're not looking too good. I mean, the likes of Paul Arretre, they'll probably bring Tim Cahill off it. But off the bench, and that's not a bad option to have. But really, they're relying on a lot of youth players at the moment.
Yeah, well, they've still got enough. They've still got enough players in their squad to hurt us. And their best players are better than our best players, and that's where it makes the difference. So we really need our best players to actually step up and go toe to toe with them this week, because you need Coco to find his range and actually put some goals away. You need Houl and Naboo to be running at their defenders and getting around them and putting good service into the box. You need Brown or Nordstrand or whoever else is playing that number 10 role to be pushing onto them and causing problems in their defensive mids, and, you know, making Kilkenny turn himself inside out, because he's not all that quick and all he knows how to do is foul people. So hopefully pressure him and get him red carded early and give us a little bit more of an advantage. But it's going to come down to whether City's best players actually play at their best capabilities. We need our players to play to their... That was what Jonesy was doing towards the middle of the season. He was getting them to perform, our players to perform over and above as a unit and individually. And that seems to have dropped off, as I said before, in one of my long-winded sections earlier on in this episode. We really need them to step up and start finding their mojo again.
You're Michael Valkanis. You're sitting on the bench and you're looking at the potential lineup for the Jets. You're seeing that Jason Hoffman's out, which will mean, as we discussed, that more than likely Daniel Mullen's going to be right back. Even Vojica, who's been out for an extended period, or even John Katrumbas coming back in at left back. Are you telling Bruce Kamau and Nick Fitzgerald, run at these guys?
Absolutely.
Just run at them. Is that where you think that, yep, Melbourne City are going to get to us?
Yeah, it's basically creating space by getting past the fullbacks who aren't going to be able to keep pace with them, and get some balls into the box to create opportunities to Fornaroli to score a header or get a knockdown or challenge for a 50-50. But that's what's going to cause it. And having players running up in support, doing quick little 1-2s and getting past those fullbacks is going to be where we're going to be vulnerable, because, Vujica, while he's quick, is probably going to be rusty, and it might take him a little bit of time to get back into the swing of things. And we've all seen what Mullen's been capable of, and the only reason he's there is because there's really no other option apart from throwing in an NPL player from Adelaide. So, yeah, they're all going to have to be on top of their game, and I'd say that we'll probably end up having to get whoever the defensive midfielders are to help screen the flanks if possible. So we're going to probably be running with some very deep defensive players.
Melbourne City, as it currently stands, they're sitting in third. A win for them this week, it will, just like the Jets, it will all but the Jets looking to get into the top six, it will, a win for Melbourne City will solidify their position in what is a tight third, fourth and fifth position. Obviously third and fourth are looking to they get the home semi-final.
Yep.
Crucial match for both teams, Ferns.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, we're relying on other teams to slip over, and we have to take maximum points, or as many points as we possibly can, in these final five games to give ourselves a fighting chance, because you know, Wanderers, basically, they've got a bunch of home games in their final five games, and they've not won at Spotless yet. So,
where, I was going to say, where do they play?
They play at Windless Stadium. So yeah, don't want to I don't want to jinx it, but we need them to continue that run of really sucking at Homebush. Except for derbies, but they're not. I think they've only got one game at ANZ Stadium against the Victory, if I remember correctly. But it's critical for both teams because for City, they want to stay in third or third or fourth, as you said. But they've really got Brisbane and Perth sniffing at their heels. They're level with points on with Brisbane, I think, and they're like 1 point in front of Perth. So they really need to all those teams in that third, fourth, and fifth positions really need to get as many points as they possibly can. I'll give my prediction in a minute, but I'm actually thinking that that City probably won't stay in third by the end of the season. But the Jets, I just don't know if we're consistent enough to be able to get enough points to be able to leapfrog both Wellington and Wanderers.
Before we talk about the Jets and their ability to make the six, I just will say, unfortunately, this match we didn't managed to chase up the guys from Torquay City. We've spoken to those guys, had the fortune of speaking to them twice this year already. With the, I guess, the short turn, not so much short turnaround, but the close proximity to the two games, the game in Coffs and the game that we are having here, we haven't followed them up. But again, we thank those guys for talking to us this year.
Absolutely.
Ferns, the Jets are in eighth, as you mentioned. They're 3 points behind Western Sydney Wanderers. The Jets have a goal difference of -9. The Wanderers in sixth have a goal difference of -7. And in between them are the Wellington Phoenix, 1 point ahead of the Jets on 23, with a goal difference of -10. The Jets have those four away fixtures. We've not performed well on the road. Do you think, Mark Jones has come out in the Herald, what will be today, saying that the Jets need 3 wins and that will get us into the playoffs. We're looking at you know, Melbourne City, then we go away to Wellington, who will be affected by World Cup qualifiers, then the Wanderers in Newcastle, a team we've never beaten in Newcastle,
yep.
And then Central Coast away, followed by Sydney. Is Mark Jones right saying that, firstly, do you think that 3 wins is going to be enough for the team? And do you have any belief that this squad can deliver that when, realistically, we've won 5 games all season?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I like to be optimistic as possible, but I just think with that number of away games, even though two of them are actually in New South Wales and not really a massive factor in travelling, it's just the teams we're playing, the times we're playing them, one home game against a team that we've never beaten on our own turf. There's just too many factors against us. I can see us getting some points out of these games. I think we can probably get a couple of draws, but I don't think it's going to be enough to overhaul Wanderers. I think we can probably overhaul Wellington. They've actually performed pretty well in their recent games as well, but they've got, I think their fixtures are actually fairly tough. I'm just having a look at their fixtures now. Wanderers, they play us, then they play Victory, then they play... Yeah, they've got a really difficult run-in. So we probably good chance. So they've got... after we play Wellington next week, Wellington then have to play Victory away, Sydney FC at home and Brisbane away. So that's a really tough finish off of the season. We're the only team outside of the top six that they're playing in those 5 games. So... we can possibly catch Wellington, but I even with the Wanderers' really poor record at Spotless Stadium,
and their ACL commitments,
I just think that they've got the 3 point buffer over us, and we're not going to be able to pick up enough points, I think, to make that count. So I think that they'll probably scrape sixth, maybe goal difference in it, maybe 1 point, 1 or 2 points, but I just don't think we've got enough consistency in us. And yeah, it's the massive factor is the fact that all the games are away or playing playing Wanderers, who we've never beaten at home.
So before I ask you for your prediction on this week's match, I will say that the referee for this fixture is Chris Beath.
Okay.
I yeah, let's all pause in remembrance. And for the Jets season. I don't have the facts in front of me. I just know that Chris Beath hates us.
Yep.
So we'll just leave that at that.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
He hates anywhere north of the Swansea Channel. What do I reckon? I think we can probably do enough in this game to draw it 1-1, but I can't see us winning.
Yeah.
It'll be a massive defensive effort, and yeah, we'll be able to get a goal, Cocco to score, but I think Fornaroli will put at least one away, and I'm hoping that's all he puts away.
Melbourne have been kept scoreless only once this year, so that's a phenomenal record, and we've kept two clean sheets. Yep. So
there's going to be goals in it.
They're going to score.
Yeah.
Can we outscore them?
Well, jeez.
I mean, look, Bugard had a massive game against Fornaroli,
yep,
and Cahill against up in Coffs Harbour to the point where that started the whole Timmy Cahill is in Nigel Bugard's pocket.
Yep, yep.
Joke.
Yep.
It'd be a massive call for them to repeat that performance. We had Daniel Mullen on the right back that game as well. I remember that was one of the best games that he played at right back, if I recall.
I think it was the only decent game he played at right back. The rest of them have been terrible.
Now, I don't think that Melbourne have that ability to control the midfield. Kilkenny is really good, but I think that our speed in behind the likes of Mullick, Jacobson, Franjic as well, and perhaps if we can shut down their attacking, if we can keep Kamau and Fitzgerald quiet, and we can look to hit on the break. That's how we do it. Cocco can hopefully find some space, but maybe the likes of Nordstrom are needed in this sort of situation. Not sure. I'm going to go with a 2-1 win to Melbourne City, unfortunately.
All right,
and that will all but knock us out of final contention because the Wanderers and Wellington play on the Sunday arvo.
Yep.
Anyway, news, mate, news.
Ding, 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 ding.
On the A-League, the official A-League website, they've been talking to one S. Miller, former coach of the Newcastle Jets, currently employed by AAB in the Danish Premier League. He's been speaking with them, and I wanted to talk about some of the interesting quotes from that article. Miller asked if he would look to come back to the A-League again. He said, yeah, definitely, I would like to coach in the A-League again. At the right time, of course, and on my own and on my terms. I found that a very interesting statement. Let me keep on going.
Yep.
If you not financially, but on my terms, structurally, I think that's key. If you're going to be measured as a coach, you need some form of strategy and structure, and certainly the people you work with have to be of the same mentality, drink, to your level of discipline, drink, and expectation. And if they're not, it's never going to work. So, he said, leaving the Jets was obviously very disappointing, and my next role had to be something I could really believe in and trust the people I was involved in. Interesting statements in that, yep, in that article. Wouldn't, yep, you agree?
Yes, yes. More interesting than a energy press conference that happened earlier today.
Huh?
Did you not see that? The South Australian Premier tearing strips off the energy minister. I've been on the road today.
Fair enough. So.
Well, check it out. I'm sure most of the people listening know what I'm talking about. Jay Weatherall, the South Australian Premier, basically standing next to Josh Frydenberg and actually ripping strips off him. They're ripping strips off. And it's basically passive-aggressive, most passive-aggressive press interview I've ever seen. It's ridiculous. And basically standing side by side and literally tearing strips off each other one by one. It's fantastic. Getting back to the question, I did remember we spoke, I think, it was the podcast last week, I think, possibly, or the week before, where Miller had actually been interviewed in 442. I think the... report you referenced was on the World Game, wasn't it?
No, this is on the A-League website.
Okay. There was an article that popped up that the Scott Miller had already been approached by some A-League clubs, and we were actually having a chat, I think. Maybe that was in our Facebook Messenger group, where he would actually go and who would possibly be looking at him. And I think that if he goes into a club, it would need to be a smaller club, not one of the big jobs in like a Sydney or a Melbourne. So I think that, you know, rules out Victory City, Sydney and Wanderers. He would possibly be a good fit for Brisbane, possibly, although I don't know whether the style of football he plays would really endear him to the Raw fans. I think maybe Wellington would probably be the ideal destination for him. But yeah, that article certainly had some digs with regards to him having one vision and the management of the Jets having a different vision for where he wanted things to go. So I don't know. Maybe he was because obviously he came into the club during that whole FFA was in charge and negotiating with Ledman to take over, and then Ledman fired him, you know, a couple of months after they took over, before the season started. So he knew that that could possibly happen, but I think that he was probably in the midst of trying to negotiate a little bit more autonomy for himself with regards to being able to make more decisions, as opposed to the FFA basically telling him, well, this is what you got to work with, go and make it happen, rather than being able to actually put a plan in place. And it was, yeah, I think, you know, he did well. He did eighth with what he had, and you know that's better than finishing in the wooden spoon position. But it would have been interesting to see what would have happened this season if they'd have actually stuck with him, because I think we would have improved. I don't know where we would have improved much more than what Jones has got us to at the moment. I would think that we would be a lot closer to sixth, or maybe sitting slightly above Wanderers at this point if Miller was in charge. Because let's not forget that most of the new players that have been brought in were Miller signings that Jones has had to work with. So these were players that Miller had specifically earmarked for his system, whereas Jones basically had to make them fit the way he wanted to play. So it would have been interesting to see how the whole season would have turned out with Miller in charge. But, yeah, definitely some interesting comments in that article.
Well, the article actually continues when they talk about... Well, no, it's okay. That was the bit about coaching that we left. But he's asked about the possibility of signing Andrew Hull for AOB. And he said, when I joined the club, I put a number of players on their scouting list, as in AAB, and a number of players in the A-League are actually being reviewed at this point. At his stage, at this club, we're very populated in the midfield, so whether or not they go for that, essentially I provide information, but I don't make the decision. That's the sporting director's decision, but there's certainly been a massive interest in approaching Australian players in the short term because they see the value in it. It's economically, but also physically and mentally.
Easy for you to say.
Drink.
Yeah.
they can deal with the demands of the Superliga.
I don't really. So, yeah, I don't know whether that means he's interested in Hull or not. I don't think he is, but he would probably be on the name on a list of players would probably have a lot of people above his name, I would think.
So, talking about Mr. Hull, the new Robert Dillon has also put another hello to. No, who's Robert Dillon on the forum?
Oh,
we don't know.
Any number of people. Not, yeah.
Yeah, it changes from week to week. But he's put out an article today that Newcastle Jets officials will continue exploring options that might enable them to retain off contract winger Andrew Hull. Mark Jones was quoted, and people can jump onto the Herald and have a read of Mark Jones's comments, basically saying what Griffo, Lord Griffo, said the other week, that, you know, it's disappointing. We're trying to work on an arrangement, perhaps as the year goes on. He's someone we'd like to keep at the club, but at the end of the day, if we can't sign someone, we'll sign someone else. So do you think the Jets have all but given up on Andrew Hull?
Oh, I think so. And there's probably a fairly decent replacement sitting down there idle on the Victory bench at the moment with three letters in his name that we could probably throw some money at and bring him up here.
Very, very interesting there indeed. Jai Ingham, my mate. I never thought that you thought that highly of Jai Ingham, but you know.
Three initials, mate. Three initials, not three.
Oh,
not,
initials. Yeah, yeah. You said three letters in
his
name.
Sorry, I didn't really explain that very properly, but yeah, no. He's got three initials. One of them starts with an F, and the other one ends in BK. So you know, you infer from that what you will. Although a lot of people do refer to BK as they do preface saying BK with F. So you know. F and B, yeah, you know, I don't need to explain that anymore. But
we got the picture.
Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of player that we would need. I think we need to be aiming for. You know, the Melbourne Victory is stacked with players. They don't think that they can keep him long term. And hey, one Victory cast off didn't do too badly for us this season. And Banco Falar is a much bigger player than Nabs. So I think he would probably be ideal to throw a 2-year contract at and see whether we can entice him up to the Hunter.
Fair enough. Speaking of the Victory, and this will be the last segue that we have. You're doing very well there, mate. Oliver Bozanic, it's been announced late tonight that he is leaving the Melbourne Victory, effective immediately, heading overseas to the J-League.
Yeah, farewell to Gippos.
And, well, look, I guess that probably opens up the opportunity for Victory to explore or further increase their chances of retaining James Truisi, who has been in fine form the last couple of weeks.
Well, it opens up a marquee spot that they'd been stupidly spending money on Bozanic for the last two seasons. So that spun me out when I realised it, and that he was still there. They didn't move him into the cap. They just basically kept him outside, and it curtailed their efforts to sign Socceroos players. I reckon Truisi probably would have returned heaps earlier if the Bozanic wasn't sucking up that marquee spot. So they'll be able to throw some more money at Truisi and keep him there for a little bit longer and get some good money for him if someone overseas comes knocking.
Very good. All right. Well, mate, that's the end of it. Okay. For me, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Mate, I don't think there's anything else we really need to touch on.
I think we've done well to get as far as we have.
Yeah, between the two of us. Yeah, exactly right.
So, if people want to find out more about the Jetstream, obviously you found it. We do encourage everyone to jump on iTunes and give us a rating. That's how other people can find us, which is excellent. And other Jets fans can listen to the podcast and listen to our ramblings. If you want to get in touch with me or the podcast or Ferns or any of the other contributors, you can find the links to the podcast in the show notes. Alternatively, you can go to newcastlefootball.net/podcast and you can find us there. Yep. There won't be any Jetstream TV this week, given that it's an away game. But thank you for all those who have left comments and watched the videos as well. We do hope that you're enjoying them. If you do want to jump onto any of the Jetstream TV podcasts, get in touch with us through the Facebook website, the Facebook page, or also Twitter as well. We'd love to have you on.
Yep.
That about wraps it up.
Yep, I think so.
All right. Very good. See you all later. Go the Jets.
Go the Jets. Go Isotopes. we should have used that last week, last episode where Anthony was talking about Springfield, and Mitch and I were talking after the episode, saying, "Oh, we should have come up with some sort of reference." So he was trying to come up with Go Isotopes. He was trying to squeeze it in there somewhere, but we just never quite got the opening.
God damn! I had one as well, but I couldn't remember it when the crunch came. Fuck. Oh well. I'm down, Benjamin.